And that took a protracted long period of time to get those changes, just perfunctory changes to a business made. And he became a little concerned about that as a licensee and began to ask, well, you know, why would this take so long? Why would you have to start an investigation if before we were John and Mary as partners and now we're John and Mary as members of the LLC? Why would that take many, many, many months to get that kind of a authorization for change? As a result of that inquiry, then, he felt like that an investigator was sent out to take a look at one of their Oregon facility, one of their Oregon facilities. This is a border facility with Idaho and Oregon chapels. Then there were called to attention that there were building codes violations. These folks coming out as investigators of building codes violations. That's when I got involved in it. I didn't realize that we had other building inspectors that wore Oregon Cemetery and Mortuary Board hats. Over a long period of time, this person then began to ask for copies of their files. You know, what is my violation? What's the potential risk? Do I stand, the ability to tax, maybe the ability to put me away for a long period of time? The concern became, you know, how long does this take? So we began to ask questions then of the Oregon Cemetery Mortuary Board. And that's when we became aware that there were cases outstanding that were extremely stale, up to 10 years of no action taken, with people's license held at bay. It's been my understanding that this came before a number of committees last session to try and encourage the OCMB to please speed up the process of finishing up the various licensing questions and concerns and investigations that were ongoing. One of the things that we did try to encourage the OCMB, the Oregon Cemetery and Mortuary Board, to do was to please make sure that their investigators that they were hiring were properly trained so that they could go in and examine and resolve issues with the board executive and get those things resolved and cleared up so that their licensees would be able to get on with their life, so to speak. Unfortunately, we were unable in the interim to actually bring true resolution in the process of hearings before various interim committees. True resolution was really not brought. So as a result of that, what this House Bill 2029 does, which was pre-introduced before the session began, basically it does one thing, and that is it just says that the board may grant a 30-day extension of time to an investigator to make a report, and finally the board does not, if they do not resolve the complaint within 180 days of the receipt, then they'll just dismiss the complaint against a licensee, and then if they have other action, causes of action, they're welcome to start new claims, but at some particular point that there is brought some finality to old outstanding claims. And that's really the petition of my concern and petition before the board, before this House committee today, is that that new cases be filed where the evidence has gotten old and stale, and where the investigators have long since moved on, and where the folks who felt like that they were aggrieved or involved in a complaint from years ago, unfortunately, may no longer even be with us. That we'd be able to accelerate the process of claims and violations against claimants, or that the old claims be liquidated and resolved in an orderly and expeditious fashion. And that's the petition of this House bill before you today. It's a very reasonable request, and basically asks the board to get its act in order and please process claims in a very timely and an orderly fashion. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Does anyone have questions of Representative Butler?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I have one. The difference between the 10 years you talk about that claims are outstanding and 180 days is a very broad difference. Do you feel that 180 days is sufficient for all investigations in this area?
Mr. Chair, those I do believe that, because having been, and I think as I look over your panel today, most all of us have some kind of licenses from the state of Oregon, and most any kind of action against any of our licenses, some of which I recognize are you know, weightier in dealing with the public than others, most all of those kinds of things can be settled in a matter of 30 to 90 days on the outside. My concern is that the evidence becomes stale and testimony of witnesses goes away and those kinds of things after 6 months. And my concern is, if in fact it is an egregious issue, before there's actually a presented case, those folks should have their testimony and their information and all of their facts in order. In an egregious case, typically the Attorney General through the District Attorney's Office will have a full case. Theirs is not barred by these kinds of things. Their case could go on for years at that point if there in fact is a crime committed or the suspicion of a crime committed. These are the kinds of things where the door is bolted on the wrong side, or the instruments were left in the sterilization tray for too long. Those kinds of things, where it's just an investigator examining and saying, you know, I just don't think that I want to continue on with this and finish my case up within the 180 days, then certainly they could be given the 30-day extension, but everyone needs to be on notice, and the file really needs to be shared at that particular point with the licensee.
Okay, thank you very much, Representative. I appreciate you being here and taking valuable time out of your day.
Thank you, Chair Riley, members of the committee. I appreciate it.
If David Coe would come forward, please, and state your name for the record and who you're representing, and then go ahead with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Riley, members of the committee. My name is David Cull. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Mortuary and Cemetery Board. During its regular meeting on January 23rd of this year, the board decided to oppose HB 2029, and I'm here to try and explain why the board made that decision. Before going any further, I have two comments about the board members themselves as opposed to staff. First, board members agree and have made it clear to staff that resolving complaints in a timely manner is a most important agency goal. Second, complaint resolution is rarely delayed due to inaction or indecision on the part of the board. Individually and as a group, board members have historically shown themselves to be impressive decision makers. They nearly always take action at the same board meeting during which an investigative matter is put before them for a decision. On those rare occasions when action is not taken, it is typically because the matter is not yet ripe for decision or because the board feels that more information is necessary. It is staff that's responsible for providing the board with sufficient information to evaluate the merits of a complaint. Though it is certainly possible for an investigator to submit a report to the board within 150 days on some cases, there are a variety of legitimate factors unrelated to any delinquency on the part of the investigators that prevent them from doing so on many other cases. Chief among those factors are overall workload and case complexity, but there are other factors too, like the priority given to the most serious complaints in a rolling caseload, certain aspects of the current confidentiality law, the kind of evidence needed to affirm or refute allegations, and the extent to which those involved in an investigation are willing and able to cooperate. Even apparently minor factors like our state's geography and the season of the year can present obstacles to the timely completion of an investigation. The board's investigators are represented employees. They are mature professionals. Great workload demands are placed upon them. In addition to investigating complaints, they inspect licensed facilities statewide and conduct background investigations on all applicants and the principals of licensed facilities. They also provide technical assistance on complex licensing matters and respond continuously to a wide variety of requests for information and assistance from licensees, consumers, and the general public. the consequences of failure to meet the 150-day investigative deadline proposed in HB 2029 are unclear. However, faced with the choice between dismissing a serious complaint that is approaching the deadline or making a decision on a case that is not yet fully investigated, the board might well elect to issue a notice of proposed disciplinary action and allow the merits of the allegation to be resolved in a contested case hearing. That would be an unnecessarily burdensome and costly outcome for everyone concerned, including the licensee, the board, and the person who filed the complaint. When the board decides to initiate disciplinary action, it has even less control over when the complaint might finally be resolved. Contested cases must be processed in strict accordance with the Administrative Procedures Act. Once a formal notice of proposed discipline has been approved by the board's assigned assistant attorney general and issued, the respondent has up to 60 days to request a hearing. The case is then referred to the Office of Administrative Hearings for assignment to an administrative law judge. The interval between the assignment of an administrative law judge and the issuance of a proposed order is principally dependent upon the complexity of the case, the availability of the ALJ, the availability of the prosecuting attorney, the availability of the defending attorney, and so on. After the ALJ's proposed order is issued, the respondent has 30 days within which to file written exceptions. If written exceptions are filed, the respondent has a right to schedule an appearance before the board to make oral argument before the board makes its final decision. Such cases are rarely resolved within 180 days. In addition to being impractical, adherence to the 180-day deadline is for the most part beyond the board's control. More significantly, imposition of the deadline would almost certainly result in the dismissal of some of the most serious matters that come before the board. Finally, given the current status of its investigative backlog, the board believes this measure is now unnecessary. The board's investigative backlog has, for all intents and purposes, been resolved. Attached as Exhibit A to my written testimony is a table showing the current status of the board's open cases, and attached as Exhibit B is a table showing actual, estimated, and projected investigative data for the period from 1995 to 2009. I thank you for your attention and the opportunity to testify, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Question? Yes, Representative Girard.
Thank you. I do have a couple questions. One is, you're talking about a 150-day requirement for investigative deadline. I see 180 days and a 30-day extension. Am I reading? Is there somewhere in this bill I'm missing that?
Chair Riley, Representative Girard, it has to do with ORS 676165, which as a threshold issue provides that complaints, that the report should be submitted within 120 days. This is at the investigative stage. Currently, health-related licensing boards like the Mortuary and Cemetery Board can extend that period for 30 days for cause, and there is no limit to the 30 days, to the number of 30-day extensions that an agency may have. So this bill, the board would still be the threshold would be an effort to resolve or submit an investigative report within 120 days. The board could get one extension, but there would be no further extension, so 120 plus 30 is 150.
Well, I'm still missing why this bill impacts that, because that's by other statute. So this bill says that the finality has to be within 180 days. With a 30-day extension. So why does that, just because you're not being able to extend the additional 30 days every time that you wish to do that? Is that
Chair Riley, Representative Girard, the 180-day deadline has to do with what the board must accomplish once after the investigative report has been submitted. So it's after the investigative report is submitted that 180-day clock to resolve the complaint comes into play. There's two parts to this bill. One has to do with investigation, and then the other has to do with what happens after the investigative report has been submitted to the board.
If I may, the way I read this, And I agree with the first part of what you said, that under the existing 675, it is 120 days and with 30-day extensions. This gives you a 30-day extension for the report, which, as you say, is 150 days. And then the way I read it, you only have another 30 days to finish board action, because this says it has to happen within 180 days of the receipt of the investigator's report. Hmm. Yeah, maybe you're right. I think, as a matter of fact, now that I read it again, I believe I agree with your reading of this. So, so what I see is you have under this bill you have 150 days to receive the investigator's report, and then another 180 days for the board to deliberate and make its decision. Is that the way you read this?
Chair Riley, that's not the way I read it. Typically, the board, once the board, on the very same day meeting that the board first considers an investigative report, the board typically makes a decision right then and there. Only in rare occasions, if the board looks at a report and finds it insufficient, needs more information, they might send staff back to get more information. But 99.9% of the time, the board receives a sufficient report. Maybe that's a little extreme, but it's way high up there. The board receives a sufficient report and makes a number of decisions. They can either decide no action, they can decide to initiate disciplinary action, but they make their decision right when they receive the report the first time in the vast majority of cases, unless there's some specific reason why they feel as though the case is not ripe for decision.
Yeah, I understand that quite often they take less than this time, but the way I read this bill, they have 180 days. After receiving the investigator's report to make that decision.
Well, it depends on how you interpret resolve a complaint. A complaint, if a complaint means resolve, the board made a decision, there's only a rare occasion when the board needs a day to make a decision. But this implies to me that the action being referred to, because it talks about resolution of the complaint and it provides this additional 180 days, the only reasonable way I felt I could interpret that was to mean the board has taken a look at the investigative report, and now it has 180 days to resolve the complaint. If the complaint is, if there's a no action or no violation complaint, it's resolved at the moment the board says no action, no violation. You don't need even a day for that. If, on the other hand, the board decides to initiate some form of disciplinary action, you get 180, this is my reading of it.
I understand.
You get 180 days to walk through the remainder of the process it takes to resolve a complaint to the point where the board makes its final decision. And that's a very difficult calendar to try and follow.
Okay.
Are you following that?
Yes, I am.
I am, yeah.
Let me ask you one more question, the same question I asked Representative Butler. There's a big difference between this amount of time and the 10 years that it's maintained that some investigations stay open. Where in that period do you think is a reasonable amount of time?
Chair Riley, what I'm trying to do is imagine the most serious cases that the board has.
Mm-hmm.
Take it at the extreme, but not beyond the realms of experience and history. And the first case that comes to mind is the Kern case, mm-hmm. in which a California funeral family retired, sent their son up to start a business in Oregon, and ultimately he had 11 different businesses. And he stole $4.5 million that was not properly trusted when he bought the facilities. The company who sold him the facilities failed to trust an additional $1 million, and Mr. Kern, after he began operating the businesses, failed to trust an additional $1 million for a total of $6.5 million. That case involved about 4,500 families in the Medford area. Almost everybody in town was affected in one way or another. I took the initial complaint myself in May of 1998, and within a few months, we had fairly good information that the money was gone, didn't know where it was. He lived a rather rich lifestyle, and we thought we knew where it was. But within a matter of months, I interviewed David Kern in front of his attorney and essentially extracted a confession from him that he spent the money. Now, that case, despite that simplicity that I've just described, that case went on for years and years.
What is years and years? When was
three,
it
It's still going on today. That was in 1998. Now the board has closed its case, but the settlement agreement may go on for another. I still get calls from attorneys and that sort of thing. We resolved it, I would say, I can't give you, I don't recall, but I think it was like within 3 years the board issued its notice, and then it may have been a year later when the board went down to testify in the criminal proceeding that put David Kern in jail for. But as far as the board's final order, I think it was within like 3 years. But it was very complex, involved U.S. Bank and the biggest funeral and cemetery company in the world and 11 facilities and bankruptcy court and assurances of voluntary compliance and an unimaginably Byzantine effort to run through the process of that case.
If you indulge me, do you have time to stick around for a little bit?
I do.
I'm going to interrupt your question and answer period to invite Representative Crummell to come forward and address the committee. Thank you very much. Thank you, Representative, for being here. We know that your time is valuable, and we appreciate you being here to help us out with this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for letting me break in, and then I'll be glad to get out of your hair. For the record, State Representative Jerry Crummell, House District 26, which is Wilsonville and Southern Washington County, over to Gaston. On House Bill 2029, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to come in and lend my support to this bill. During the course of the last interim on the Joint Legislative Audits Committee, we were taking a look at the Oregon Mortuary and Cemetery Board, some of their actions, some of the things that they've done, and some of the things that they have failed to do. I noticed on Mr. Coe's testimony that he has put the graphic Exhibit A with regards to the number of cases that they have pending. And I would direct your attention to Exhibit B, in which back in 99 and 01 and 03, they had a lot of cases that were open. They tend the board tends to like to interpret the statute that if anybody makes a phone call and inquires or complains, that then they need to do an investigation and that they have to have everybody and their brother go out and check and make sure that the mortuary is operating in the way it's supposed to. And I've even had complaints from mortuary owners that have stated that they've come in and told them that they couldn't in remodeling projects basically tried to do the reengineering for them, or that their staff was doing that. This is beyond the purview, in my estimation, of what a regulatory board should be doing. And while the regulatory board is put in place to protect the public, they also have to remember who's paying the freight. That's the licensees. And if there's when there's issues between the licensees and the board, they need to figure out a way to resolve those. And, you know, it's interesting because you look at some of our other health regulating boards, and they have really figured it out. The optometry board, for example, if they get a complaint about a practitioner, the first thing they do is they try to figure out a way to work it out so that it's just done and taken care of. They try to mediate a settlement of sorts with the complainant as well as the physician that's been complained against. The Oregon Mortuary Board, however, has chosen to take a very heavy-handed road in many of their investigations, and they have let them languish and linger to the point where last session during the audits committee we were getting complaints about them, and then during the early part of the interim getting complaints about the board and their actions and the length of time that it was taking to get things done. Representative Butler then suggested that we that this bill be put into place. And the way that I would read this is that it is giving them 180 days with a 30-day extension, the same way that I believe Representative Girard is interpreting it, which would give them a total of 210 days. Now, there may be an extenuating circumstance, but that would not keep the board from going to court and asking for the court to rule. The other potential option would be, I believe, that in the statute is the ability of the person that the complaint is against to be able to toll the days. If there's not, maybe that would be an amendment that we would want to put in there. However, we have to be very careful about that, and that's not used in a retaliatory way. In other words, you know, we've got this complaint against you, and we are going to hammer you unless you agree to toll the days so that we can finish our investigation. And the problem is those can go on then indefinitely. So what I would suggest, Mr. Chair, is that this is a good place to start. One of the things that we've realized during the JLAC process is that this board needs to be brought under more legislative purview, more legislative oversight, and we need to make sure that this board has control of their work, and that we not just allow them to continue down the path that they have gone. You will also see other. I assume that they will come to this committee since this bill came here, but there will be some other bills that will be popping out also relative to the Oregon Mortuary and Cemetery Board to again attempt to bring them under closer purview of the legislature, which I think legislative oversight is extremely important. I'd be happy to stop there and answer any questions, Mr. Chair, and when you're done with me, I will just get out of your hair.
Thank you, Representative Gerard.
Representative Cromwell, Representative Butler made a point that if there's serious violations that it goes to the Attorney General's office, I believe, for prosecution. I'm having a hard time finding that in this bill, but the majority of this, if you read lines 9 through 11, basically these are pretty much the minor violations that the Mortuary and Cemetery Board are supposed to deal with. Is that sort of your understanding of this?
Are you, excuse me, Mr. Chair and Representative Gerard, as a clarification, are you talking about 9 to 11 on page 1?
Yes.
Okay.
It tells the rights about what they can impose, $1,000 for each violation. It doesn't talk about jail time or anything like that for, you know, some fairly serious offenses that are covered under any other ORSs. So, and Representative Butler did say that serious offenses go to the Attorney General's, and I...
Well, I believe that, excuse me, Mr. Chair and Representative Gerard, I think that in looking at this, this does delineate out what the offenses are that they that can be, if you start on line 13,
right.
Things that would cost, for each violation could cost $1,000. Now, if there is criminal activity that is suspected, then the board, of course, could have the AG's office take that into court or go to the local DA asking for there to be a DA's investigation, and that would take it into a different realm from a standpoint of the statute. Now, where in the statute that would be, I'm not sure. I'm not a lawyer. I'm only qualified to make the law. I'm not qualified to adjudicate it. But the other thing is that I believe in 676, 160, 165, excuse me, also I think delineates out some of the things that the board has the authority to do as a health regulatory board.
Sure, Ryan. One more question. I think we got a little bit different figures because this is 180 days plus a 30-day extension from the receipt of the investigator's report, and we have from previous testimony that can run up to 150 days. So I get 330 plus 30, so it's 360 days, actually, from the length of the report.
Representative, I have in front of me 676.125, the complaint investigation.
Yes.
And it does say The investigator shall make the report to the board not later than 120 days after the board receives the complaint. However, the board may extend the time for making a report by up to 30 days for just cause. The board may grant more than one extension of time.
I can clarify, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
That is the case, and then subsection 4, sub A on page 2, lines 19 through 21, that's where the except that the board may grant only one 30-day extension of time, that's where that applies, is to that particular thing. So instead of allowing as many extensions as justifiable, it allows for only one.
So I give you 150 days.
Mm-hmm. So that would give 150, excuse me, Mr. Chair, Representative Rudd, and Committee Administrator Patrick. It would give 150 days in that respect. However, it also does very directly say that that the board will resolve the complaint within 180 days. Or if they don't, they have to dismiss the complaint. So
the receipt of the investigator's report.
But that would be one of those things. That's most certainly, if it was the intention of the committee to move to go ahead and act on this bill and send it out, one of the things that we might want to do in conjunction with Representative Butler and with Patrick would be to talk to the Legislative Council about that, get that clarified, and if there would be a need for an amendment. I think the idea that Representative Butler and he and I have talked about this because we both have had constituents that have had issues with the board. Is that my understanding and my conversation with Representative Butler, and only he could testify to this himself, is that they'd be given 180 days. That's 6 months. That's, I think, where, there needs to be a finite thing to this so that when a person has a complaint filed against them, they know that there's going to be a decision within a finite period of time. Right now, you know, it's kind of whenever they feel like making a decision, they get around to it.
Thank you very much. We quite often have differences between the legislator who filed the bill's intent and what comes out of the LC. But I do agree with you that I believe that was his intent. And so thank you very much. Any other questions? Thank you very much. We appreciate
Appreciate it.
And are there any other questions for Mr. Koch before we... apparently, we don't have any more questions for you right now, so we will move on. Thank you. Ty Cochran. Thank you. Just state your name and if you're representing someone, and go ahead with your testimony.
Chairman Riley, members of the committee, I am Ty Cochran, legislative liaison for the Cemetery Association of Oregon. And after I've heard the testimony here today, I'm probably going to make it a little briefer than what I normally was going to, because I think you've heard what needs to be done with the bill. The bill has some great intentions, but I think it needs to be sent back to Legislative Council with some of the suggestions that's being handed to you here today. And I could give you a brief scenario of what could happen if the board had to resolute a complaint in 180 days in the worst case scenario. You could take an abusive corpse case or a fraudulent case as the Kearns case and have it dismissed in 180 days without the board giving us some type of conclusion that it has to be sent to the Attorney General's office or some other agency, but to simply drop it, as this bill suggests, does not do this industry any good or the consumers of Oregon any good. So please, if you could just read what we've handed there to you, is some suggestions for Legislative Council, and I don't want to go into some of the scenarios I was going to earlier because I think you've got the gist of it already. So,
question? Representative Rudd?
I hate to do this, but basically the way the bill's drafted and the way everybody interprets it are two different things. The way the bill's drafted, you really have 180 days from the receipt of the investigator's report, which is 100, it can be up to 150 days, and you can have a 30-day extension on that. So you actually have 360 days to come up with a decision. That doesn't mean that the decision, say that there's probation or whatever, all they're saying is you have 360 days to come up with a decision as to what the recommendation is going to be. If there's criminal activity, that goes to the AG's office under a different statute and is taken from there, and this bill does not apply, and the 180 days is irrelevant. So, at least that's my interpretation. I don't know about anybody else.
Sure, Representative Gerard, that's where I think it was the Cemetery Association of Oregon's that some better language needs to come from legislative counsel so that we are all on the same page here, because it's kind of blank to me here. So,
if we are all on the same page and it's 340 days, I believe, whatever that period of time is, which is about a year, do you feel that that's an adequate length of time?
Chair Riley, members of the committee, I feel that's an adequate time frame. As if it goes beyond that, though, I think, as we have presented to you, that the State Mortuary and Cemetery Board and staff should give us a reason of why that it's going on, that it's been referred to some other agency. To simply drop it after a year or 2 years in some of these horrendous cases that have happened in the state of Oregon, I don't feel that that's correct.
Any other questions? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
If we could have a couple of people, Amy Lowry and Wally. And you can tell me what this says when you get up there. Whoever wants to go first, if you would give us your name and.
Chair Riley, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Amy Lowry. I'm a licensed funeral director and president-elect of the Oregon Funeral Directors Association. I appreciate the opportunity to come before you today to testify on House Bill 2029. And by way of background, you've heard from Representative Butler and Representative Crummell as to some of the incidents that have led to this bill. Basically, the fact that there was a significant backload of cases that had not been acted upon in a timely fashion was of considerable concern to our association and licensees as well. The Oregon Funeral Directors Association felt very strongly that these cases needed to be resolved in a timely fashion for the sake of all parties involved. The Oregon State Mortuary and Cemetery Board took this problem seriously and have been working very hard to require staff to complete the investigations on old complaints and bring the caseload up to date, as you have heard. We commend the board for their diligence and their actions in working to correct this problem. In the past few months, following a joint board meeting of the Oregon State Mortuary and Cemetery Board and the Oregon Funeral Directors Association, a work group was formed to recommend improvements pertaining to staff operations, including inspections. We believe there is a great deal of promise to work with the board to resolve the problems we have had with staff and improve the overall efficiencies of the inspection process. As such, we would ask that you not move on this bill at this time, but rather allow us to work with the board through our work group to see if these issues can't be resolved without this legislation. Thank you.
Questions? Go ahead.
I'll just, excuse me, Chair Riley and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Wally Ordeman. I'm a fifth-generation funeral director in Albany and a member of the Oregon Funeral Directors Association Board, and also serve on this work group, this committee, that was formed as a result of the October meeting between the Mortuary and Cemetery Board and the Oregon Funeral Directors Association. And beyond that, Amy has shared our thoughts, and I don't think I can improve upon them. So. We'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Durant. Since you asked that this be tabled, what do you hope to gain by your negotiations with the board?
Chair Riley and Representative Girard, the goal of this committee is to resolve some significant differences between the Mortuary and Cemetery Board and the industry. The industry feels that there are some very significant inefficiencies with inspections, as well as some contradictory language in OARs and statute. The goal of this committee, which has met now two different times over the course of the last 3 weeks, is to try and resolve some of these differences, as well as work on the OARs to improve the relationship between the two.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
I see we have Mayor Diane Hall from Klatskin Eye. If you would come up, please. Thank you for being here, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Riley and members of the committee. I'll get this. Excuse me.
And please state your name for the record.
I will. My name is Diane Pohl. I am Mayor of Klatskin Eye. I also am retiring board member for 8 years of the Oregon Mortuary Cemetery Board, 14 years beyond that. This issue came into my life 22 years ago, and I've spent a great deal of my life kind of watchdogging the industry and all of these things. And I really, my testimony is mostly on the Kern case, so you've already heard it. And so I may, if I may, I'll just deviate from that to say that it was a very good work group that we had in October. And I think that there are issues on both sides of the fence, but what I saw at that meeting was the ability to come together, both the board, who's a very hard-working volunteer board. It's a very balanced board with people from the industry and from the public sector on that board. I really share their opinions of the future, because I think it's going to be a good future. But this bill is very anti-consumer. It's hard. Having been on both sides, having been a complainant and then following this industry through and then serving on the board, I can tell you that the vast majority of our meetings have to be in private because of that confidentiality law. This really widened the gulf between the board and the industry, because we can't tell them what we're looking at. We can't tell them about the cases. We're bound by law to go out and discuss with them. When I first went on the board, before that confidentiality law, we had cases come up where so-and-so over in Eastern Oregon, he was not in compliance because his refrigeration unit wasn't working. One of the board members took it on themselves to find a unit, get it to Eastern Oregon, and to get that person in compliance. And at that time, we had a very good ability to help, particularly the small operators, small licensees. To another time, his books were out of compliance. One of our members was an accountant. She went and helped him get his books into compliance so that we could have that go away. That confidentiality law stopped all of that cooperation that we could have with the industry members. And insofar as we can't tell them anything. When they come into an open meeting, we've already had a two-hour executive session, and all we can show them is a number, case number 05277. They have no idea. They have no idea, and we can't go out and say, is there any way that we can help this person and resolve this? And that confidentiality law destroyed more trust and ability of cooperation than any law that's ever been passed in the state of Oregon. The reason this is anti-consumer, there are a few cases like Kern's who are so egregious. It came before our board. We tried to get the Secretary of State to to handle it. They wouldn't do it. They didn't want to do it. We went to DOJ. We went everywhere that we could go until we decided as a board we had to take lead on this particular issue because it was 4,500 families involved in this. And we did. Then the AG came in behind, and DCBS, we got them involved. But had we not had the latitude to take lead on this, Mr. Kuhn would have continued to enjoy his $6 million in Southern Oregon. But because we had the, we could take the lead, and we had the time to do this, we were able to resolve it, and it took a federal DA to help us. The local DA in Medford would not touch it. So to say that these cases can go to the AG or DA, that's not history. On the budget, the board took the budget notes very seriously that Representative Kremel was talking about. We took it very seriously. We addressed each and every one of them, including the backlog and other issues that were brought up. We took those under advisement immediately, and we resolved them. We resolved the backlog. And one of the reasons the backlog happened was the Kern case. It took so – we have a small staff. We're running mean and lean, and it took a lot of time to resolve that. We do mediate. We do mediate. We have case after case after case after case each and every time we meet where there has been a complaint by a consumer that is easily fixed. And our investigators will get a hold of the person the complaint is against, get a hold of that person, and in many instances, you know, the headstone is in the wrong place. That's all mediated out. It never sees any action. So there is mediation that goes on, but we can't tell the industry that because we can't tell them what we're doing. We're bound by that. On the remodeling issue, that is a standard, and the reason that came up, there was some flap over the fact that there is a standard that says you cannot have an open door where the public goes back and forth in a funeral home, an open door that goes into your prep room. And this is so little Johnny doesn't see Grandma on the prep table when he's going to the service. And so this has gotten to be an issue that they keep bringing up, that our investigators are now building inspectors. It has to do with the policy that the door has to be self-closing, maybe if there's a window in the door that it be covered. And this is only as protection to the public. Our investigators do not try, nor have they tried, to be building inspectors. That's about all that I'm going to burden you with. I just wanted to tell you that there are wonderful, hardworking people in the industry. There are wonderful, hardworking people on the board and the staff. And I do believe we've made a start to move forward. I would like to see this House bill go away. Give us a chance. Give this process a chance to work. If it doesn't in 2 years, we can come back again. So I thank you for your time. I am open to any questions. On my testimony, I've given you my business card. I am happy to be called at any time, and will be available to the committee.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe this question is better addressed to David, but I'm just kind of, forgive my ignorance here, I'm just trying to understand better the relationship and what's, is there an agency, or is the board pretty much the agency? I'm just trying to...
There's an 11-member board, and then we have staff.
Okay. And then my question, follow-up is, who does the board answer to?
The board answers, we have an attorney general, representative from the attorney general's office there each meeting, to guide us and to make sure that we are within our parameters. The board members are appointed by the governor of the state of Oregon.
And another question. If there are penalties assessed, is there a penalty matrix?
Yes, there is.
There is. Okay.
Yes, it's
so
a statute.
It keeps it consistent.
Yes.
Okay. All right. That's all I needed to know. Thank you.
Thank you.
Seeing no others, thank you very much for your time. And... Rick Bennett.
Thank you, Chair Riley. Members of the committee, for the record, Rick Bennett, Director of Government Relations for AARP Oregon. I became aware of some of the issues related to the board about 6 months ago. I attended the meeting that's been mentioned that occurred in October. Based on the what I heard at that meeting, I wrote a letter to the board for its November meeting and suggested that certainly there were some very relevant issues here and that perhaps some type of advisory committee with representation from the board, the industry, and the public might be helpful in looking at some of these issues and developing some recommendations that the board can act on. And in fact, that isn't exactly what's happened. And I myself am on that advisory committee. As mentioned previously, we've met a couple of times, and I'm very optimistic that that work group, that committee, is going to come forward with a number of recommendations that I think will be very helpful and that will hopefully resolve some of the conflict that currently exists between the board and the industry that it's supposed to regulate. And this, the issues we're looking at involve not only investigations, but also facility inspection, licensure, issues related to the Federal Trade Commission, and confidentiality, as previously mentioned. So, again, I think I would share the testimony given by some of the others here and the fact that at this time I think this bill is probably not appropriate. I'm very hopeful that we can resolve these issues without legislation, and I would hope that you would not take action on this bill at this time. Thank you.
Questions? Thank you very much. I have anyone on the committee like to make any comments or have any further questions?
Yes, Representative Fletcher.
Well, if we didn't move on this bill, I'm wondering if it would be appropriate to say or to suggest that, just throwing this out here, that this group or a representative thereof could report back to the legislature during, I don't know, whether our upcoming special emergency session or perhaps next session.
This committee will be an interim committee.
Okay.
Actually, I'm more concerned about some of the testimony that on the egregious case that they couldn't get the Attorney General to come in with criminal activity, and I think that bothered me more than the bill itself. So I don't know if we need to revisit the language of what the penalties or the matrices are with the ORSs, but I don't have a problem with tabling it because that seems to be the consensus.
Mr. Koch, did you want to respond to that? I saw your hand come up.
Thank you, Chair Riley. Representative Gerard, the...
Would you state your name again, please?
David Coe, Executive Director, Mortuary and Cemetery Board. The Attorney General's office was involved toward the end of this process. They were especially helpful in the criminal prosecution of David Kern years after the money had been restored through this vast settlement agreement. An arm of the Justice Department called the DA Assist Unit. The problem with small boards like ours and making criminal referrals is that most district attorneys' offices are stressed. They lack funding. They lack resources. And when issues like ours, perhaps the Kern case did get some issues, but for your garden variety theft or misappropriation of funds that involves a few thousand dollars, even though that's important to individual consumers, from a DA's perspective, they're handling murder and rape and all sorts of violent crimes, and they are more likely to take on a case when an agency like ours has already done the legwork. In other words, after we're through with our administrative process, if there are criminal matters involved, the board will often say, you know, this just isn't a license revocation issue. This is a serious crime, and we need to do something beyond simply fine someone or revoke their license. This needs to go to the criminal court. When that arises, if we have a file to provide, they're more likely to pursue that. If we expect that they're going to take it from scratch because we didn't finish it, it's unlikely they're going to do that. In the Kern case, the DA assist unit, an attorney, an assistant attorney general from DOJ, was appointed a special deputy DA by the county involved. I can't remember if it was, I think it was Josephine County. And then it was an assistant attorney general who actually prosecuted the criminal case against David Kern. Board member Bassett Pohl was referring to getting this case up and off the ground. And it wasn't a criminal issue at that point. It was just getting people to pay attention and to try and persuade various people in various agencies that this was a very serious matter. And the board's the reason the board was so effective is that it wouldn't let it go away. Board members simply would not let it go away. If we called and didn't get a response, we called again and again and again and again, and we finally got the attention that it deserved. But DOJ did come in the end and put David Kern in jail.
Thank you again. I'm very encouraged and pleased by what I've heard today about your cooperation between agencies and the licensees. And I think you're to be commended, and I appreciate your coming here today. I would like to take advantage of Representative Thatcher's suggestion and request if you would please at some future time, and we can work that out with our administrator, come back and let us know how that's going. And with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2029. Thank you all very much. I'm going to open the public hearing on House Bill 2227. Would you give us a rundown on that, Patrick?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill 2227 is a forward bill. Staff loves forward bills. It eliminates from statute the requirement that licensed polygraph examiners register with the county clerk in each county where the examiner maintains a business address. In your packets, you'll find the statute that's being repealed, which is ORS 703.320, and also a one-page piece of testimony from Jan Coleman, who's the legislative chair of the Oregon Association of County Clerks, and they are supportive of the bill.
Mr. Ranch, would you come and enlighten us, please?
For the record, my name is Marilyn Lawrence. I oversee the Standards and Certification Program for the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. Chair Riley and members of the committee, as you have heard from your committee administrator, the purpose of this bill is very simple, and that is to repeal a requirement that licensed polygraph examiners, in addition to being licensed with the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, also register with the county clerk. That provision has been in Oregon law since the inception of the polygraph licensing process in the mid-1970s. The Polygraph Licensing Advisory Committee that provides the department with expertise and advice in matters of polygraph licensing raised this matter in mid-2005 because it seemed to be an obsolete provision to them. At their request, I contacted the County Clerks Association in late 2005. They raised the issue with the County Clerks Association at their annual meeting. The members concurred at that meeting. Based on consensus from all of the parties, the department asked that this bill be brought forward. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you, sir.
And with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2227. And I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2227.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2227 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be placed on the consent agenda.
Representative Girard moves that we pass House Bill 2227 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and place it on the consent agenda. Is there any discussion? Any objections? It's ordered, and we're closing the work session on House Bill 2227. Thank you all for attending. I'm going to adjourn this committee, and thank you very much.